that's where he lost me, Bernard, on that word work. I'd been working for him ever since we were married. I worked while he studied for his master's, his PhD, and while he held research jobs that paid practically nothing. And now he was asking me to work for the rest of my life to make him president of the United States one day. Well, I don't want to work for a man anymore. All I really want to do is play the horses.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to an eargasmic edition of the U.S. Racing Sports Gambling Show. I am your friendly host, Derek Simon, and this is the show where we talk about everything and anything related to the world of gambling, and quite the show on tap today. Joining me as a guest today is Carolyn Sumner. She started a new website for new horse racing fans with the attempt to draw new fans, younger fans, into the game. But before we get to that, there are a few things that you need to know.
I'm looking forward to completing your training. In time, you will call me Master.
All righty then. I learn it from a book.
I find this scientifically fascinating.
You're gonna remember this the rest of your life.
Oh, I already knew that.
Didn't you understand?
Will you never learn?
Help you, I can. Yes.
Before we get too far into the show, I should note that Kevin Rogers of VegasInsider.com will not be joining me today, and that is because Kevin deserves a break. What a playoff streak he had. Picked the Super Bowl, and in fact, that was the first thing I wanted to talk about, is the Super Bowl. A lot of reaction to what Cam Newton had to say and kind of the way he handled the post-Super Bowl stuff. Now, I struggle with this a little bit. I've said before, I really like Cam Newton. I like the energy that he brings to the game. I think he's a very good player. I thought the hype was completely out of whack. This business that we've never seen a quarterback like Cam Newton, and that Cam Newton is the greatest, was a little bit hard to take, especially when you consider that the Denver Broncos had just dismantled Tom Brady, and I thought Tom Brady was as game as they get in that conference championship loss. He was under tremendous duress. He played very, very well. And so then the thought that we're going to play Carolina in the Super Bowl, and it's going to be so much tougher because Cam Newton is so much better than Tom Brady, that's a little bit hard to stomach. I mean, Cam Newton has basically had one good year. And Brady's best years, and Manning's best years, and Rodgers' best years, Russell Wilson's best years, better than Cam Newton's. Now, I understand the physical dimension that Cam Newton brings. You know, here's a guy who's 6'4", 6'5", I don't know, 250 pounds. So from that standpoint, I get it. But I did think it was insulting to some of these other quarterbacks. That being said, I have a hard time bashing Cam Newton. I just wish he would have handled things better. Couple clips here. First, Cam Newton pre-Super Bowl. I want you to listen to the mood, and then post-Super Bowl right afterwards.
He's talking about my dad. He's talking about my flow. But it's one thing that you need to know. Even though you a good fellow, I don't think you got swag because your shirt is yellow. It should have been Carolina blue. Something that you should have thought, something you should have knew. We're chilling in the Super Bowl with a lot of media. Man, I hate talking to the media. But it's all good. It's all great. Man, I look at my team. Man, them boys straight. I'm straight out of College Park by way of Atlanta. You can see the towel on my head. Some people call it a bandana. I'm chilling, I'm flowing, having a good time. But everybody worry about me. Don't worry about mine, because I keep talking, I keep flowing, and I'm doing what I do. Everybody need to know about the Carolina Blue.
So there's Cam Newton having fun before the Super Bowl. It was a rap battle with some reporter. You know, the one line in there that kind of stuck out to me was, don't worry about me. Well, Cam, you kind of made it about you. That's part of the problem here. Now, here's Cam Newton in the well-publicized press conference shortly after the Super Bowl.
They just played better than us. I don't know what you want me to say. It's like, they made better, more plays than us. And that's what it come down to. I mean, we had our opportunities. It wasn't nothing special that they did. We dropped balls. We turned the ball over. Gave up sacks. Errant passes. That's it. They scored more points than us.
Here's the problem. You had the New England tape. Tom Brady's got the quickest release in the league. He got sacked. He got harassed. Cam Newton might have a quick release, but he doesn't release the ball quickly. And frankly, this is a problem with a lot of young quarterbacks. As many of you know, I'm a Seattle fan and a Denver fan. I can't seem to make a choice. And so I've watched Russell Wilson. And I think Russell Wilson is a great quarterback. I think he's better than Cam Newton, frankly. But he too has had trouble with not releasing the ball in time. The difference between Cam Newton and Russell Wilson, though, and this is what I thought was so intriguing leading up to the Super Bowl, is that Russell Wilson is a very elusive quarterback. Cam Newton is not. And that might be an instance where his size is an issue because he's just not that quick. Now, he's a great runner, but a part of that is due to his size. So there was so much, I thought, in the hype of the Super Bowl that was just out of proportion. And of course, as a Denver fan, I made this comment just as a football fan. I'm like the neurotic Woody Allen type. You know, I just think everything's going to go wrong. So I'm nervous. And so it's really hard for me to be impartial in these kinds of games. But that's what was kind of nice when Kevin came onto the show and he talked about the Denver Broncos. And I mentioned last week, you know, you made some really good points, or I thought he made some really good points, and made me feel that much better about my own observations. And by the way, this is something, and the reason I brought this up, kind of a secondary reason, is because this plays into sports gambling as well. You have to know your strengths and weaknesses. And I generally think it's a mistake to play games, play horses, bet on anything where you have an emotional attachment, because it's very difficult to look past those emotions and to be rational. That was something I didn't even attempt in the Super Bowl. Just wanted to enjoy the game. Next thing I want to talk about is on the racing front. There were some great preps that took place, particularly at Santa Anita. So I want to play some of the stretch calls of those races. We're going to start with the Robert B. Lewis, where More Spirit put Bob Baffert back into the Kentucky Derby hunt.
I will score, Uncle Lino. More Spirit, a length and a half behind them. He's called on now with a furlong left to go. I will score, Uncle Lino, running a giant race. More Spirit, confidently handled, gets a left-handed reminder now, and he's trying to get them. Here he comes. And More Spirit is progressing very nicely under Gary Stevens as he takes care of business with plenty left in the tank on the road to the Santa Anita Derby. Uncle Lino was second. I will score third, dressed in Hermes fourth.
Now, we were just talking about emotion a minute ago, and there's a classic example. You notice the track announcer at Santa Anita talking about how More Spirit had plenty left in the tank. That is a subjective judgment. And a lot of people look at this. Oh, the horse won easily. The greatest example of this is when Funnyside won the Kentucky Derby. Of course, in the prep for the Kentucky Derby, in the final prep for the Kentucky Derby, Funnyside was second to Empire Maker, and Empire Maker, by all accounts, was not used. Jerry Bailey had tons of horse. Therefore, there's no chance that Funnyside can reverse that decision in the Kentucky Derby. Well, not only did he reverse the decision, but it was fairly emphatic. And then, of course, Empire Maker came back to win the Belmont Stakes. But we got to be real careful when we make these judgments as to whether or not an effort was easy or not. And that's why I like looking at figures. And in fact, I computed my pace figures for all the races at Santa Anita. The RB Lewis, a -1 ESR pace. Now, the ESR is my early speed ration. It's a measurement of early energy disbursement. And the lower the figure, the more energy expended early. So -1, not a whole lot in terms of pace. Now, I will say that typically, because the Kentucky Derby par ESR is a -10, I like to see horses that faced that kind of energy requirement. However, it was just a few years ago when I'll Have Another ran in exactly these kinds of races at Santa Anita and was able to adapt to the faster pace in Louisville. So a minus one early for the RB Lewis, plus one for More Spirit, and a minus two LSR. Now, here's the impressive part. I have what I call a pace profile number. And before I get to that, I probably should explain the LSR. That's a late speed ration. It's a measurement of late energy disbursement. The higher the figure, the better. So a minus two is very, very good, especially for a dirt race. Now, the pace profile looks at both of those numbers and assesses whether the horse went faster early, relatively speaking, or faster late, relatively speaking. And although I don't want to get into it, the relatively speaking is important. Because as a general rule, horses are going to tire over the course of a race. This isn't always true on artificial surfaces and turf surfaces, but for the most part, it is true. So in turf races, you certainly want to see a positive pace profile. You want a horse that's going to run faster, relatively speaking, late than early. But it's very, very indicative of talent in dirt races as well. A 53 degree pace profile for More Spirit in the RB Lewis. That was the best of the three races that were run. And speaking of the three races, let's move on to the second one. Actually, not in terms of order, but just the order that I want to follow here. And that was the San Antonio won by Hopportunity.
A quarter of a mile to go. It's still Cat Burglar and Donworth. Cyrus Alexander. Hopportunity went extremely wide. Hard Aces is making solid progress at the rail. They're a furlong from the finish, and even Imperative is getting involved. He's starting to roll extreme outside. Here comes Imperative and Hopportunity. They're side by side trying to get to Donworth. Donworth, Hopportunity, and Imperative. Here's the line. Photo finish. It's so close. Imperative and Hopportunity noses apart. Donworth was a good third. Cat Burglar finished fourth.
Now, this race was interesting. Hopportunity wins the photo, of course. He is now 5 of 18 lifetime with 6 second place finishes, 3 third place finishes, and $1.8 million in the bank. The pace figure is very, very interesting, though. A minus 6 ESR pace equating to a plus 1 ESR for Hopportunity, minus 8 LSR. Not very good, especially in light of some of the other figures. Again, the RB Lewis a minus two, so about 6 lengths faster late, relatively speaking, in the RB Lewis than the San Antonio. And a minus 65 degree pace profile for Hopportunity. Which brings us to the Las Virgenes and a horse that is drawing some crazy comparisons. I'm talking, of course, about Songbird.
At the top of the stretch, and it's all Songbird putting on a show for the Santa Anita fans, and this is a privilege to watch. Mike Smith has been aboard some brilliant distaffers, and this is one of them. They can't warm her up. She's all Songbird by herself to win by 8. Second to Land Over Sea. She's a Warrior third, and Mary Rospo fourth.
Now, I wrote an article after this race comparing Songbird to Ruffian, just because I'd heard that comparison made. And it's always funny when I do these articles because you get the comments from people that, you know, they don't read the article. They're like, I disagree. How can you even make that comparison? Well, read the article because I really didn't. Having said that, I'm very intrigued by Ruffian as a great horse. And I've made this point before, but I'll make it again. You hear so many people talk about time in races. Doesn't matter. Time only counts when you're in prison. Yet greatness is defined by time. It always is. Always has been. When you look at Man O' War, he didn't compete against anything. I mean, we talk about match races, which are so rare in the modern game. A match race, of course, being two horses competing. Man O' War did this continuously. In her first 5 starts, Ruffian, average field size, 5.6 horses. She beat the same group over and over and over again. And this is meaningful because when you have a front runner, what makes for a great front runner? Anybody remember Bellamy Road? Remember Bellamy Road in the Wood Memorial a few years back? He got an easy lead and he blitzed the field. This is typical of front runners when they get their own way. This is why when Dr. Fager faced Damascus, there was a rabbit in the race in many cases. Because the connections of Damascus did not want Dr. Fager out there on his own. Now, as racing has evolved, people look at this in a very negative light, like it's a bad thing. Some of you will remember the horse Better Talk Now, the Breeders' Cup turf champion. He always, well, I won't say always, but he typically had a rabbit entered for him to ensure a reasonable pace. How does this relate to Ruffian? How does it relate to Songbird? Well, Ruffian was never headed. And I made the point in some Facebook posts that if you look at Ruffian's career and you look at the pace figures, her two worst races, including, unfortunately, the terrible breakdown against Foolish Pleasure, came when there was a very fast pace. Minus 10 pace in the sorority at Monmouth, and she won by 2 1/4 lengths. That was her lowest or her smallest margin of victory in her career prior to that match race. In the match race, get this. Now remember, the lower the figure, the better for the ESRs. In the match race against Foolish Pleasure, a minus 18 ESR for 1 1/4 miles. That, my friends, is unheard of in top grade racing. And you might wonder, why in the world would anybody do that? Well, remember, it's a match race. In match races, you have one horse to beat. If that was a field of horses, that would be absolute suicide for two horses to do that. And in fact, you'll remember that when Rachel Alexandra tied Ruffian's track record in the Mother Goose, that is what happened. Two sprinters went out, set crazy fractions, not that crazy, not as crazy as the match race between Ruffian and Foolish Pleasure, and Rachel Alexandra stalked and pounced and won. But in a match race, it doesn't matter because there is no horse or horses to pick up the pieces. And the history of match races is heavily tilted towards the horse that gets the lead. This is why Seabiscuit was trained in the dead of night to try to get quicker early, because they did not want to be behind War Admiral. So a minus 18, and it's been my contention, and unfortunately I think a lot of other people probably agree with this, and I think it's unfortunate because it actually affects Songbird in some ways, I believe. Unfortunately, I think that pace just got to Ruffian. I really believe that's what caused the breakdown. Just tremendous duress. You'll hear stories about how a bird flew in front of her and she took a bad step and this and that, but you just don't go that fast early. And Ruffian was primarily a sprinter. In fact, if you look at her first five races, average distance of 5.7 furlongs. Songbird, 7.6 furlongs. In fact, Songbird has already routed 3 times. Ruffian did not route in any of her first 5 races. Admittedly, that was a different era, and trainers often did that with younger horses. Sprinted for the longest time, then went to routes. There was no starting off in a route, you know, with a promising 2-year-old. It just didn't happen very often. But I say it's unfortunate because I can't help but think this is part of the thinking behind not even considering Songbird for the Kentucky Derby. There was a great article by Bill Finley about this. Filly for the ages, Songbird belongs in the Derby. And he makes the point that Songbird possibly is the best 3-year-old, period, of any sex. And yet there is no thought of running the horse in the Kentucky Derby. And there's questions as to whether Rick Porter, who owned 8 Bells, doesn't have that memory still fresh in his mind. Of course, 8 Bells ran second to Big Brown, but broke down shortly after the finish and had to be euthanized. So it's very, very intriguing. In terms of the pace figures for Songbird, a minus 7 ESR, which is fast, but not super fast, and a minus 8 LSR, that's a negative 50 degree pace profile. The minus 8 LSR, you'll notice, matches the San Antonio handicap. That wasn't as fast, because remember, my pace figures are relative. They don't reflect speed as much as they reflect a distribution of speed. But Songbird certainly has a lot of talent, and in the Kentucky Derby, having front speed is very, very important. Now, before we visit with Carolyn Sumner, I did want to talk a little bit about value. There's some great betting going on this weekend at U.S. Racing, including trainer bets and jockey bets on the Kentucky Derby. Meaning that if you have a certain trainer that you like, you can bet the trainer and you lock in those odds. That's important too for the Kentucky Derby. So if you want to bet Bob Baffert, you get whatever horses he's got in the Kentucky Derby. If he's got none, of course, he can't win the Kentucky Derby. But you understand how it works. Well, Steve Haskin wrote an article about this in Bloodhorse, and he's talking about how we need a bet like this. Well, like I said, there is a bet like this if you go to usracing.com. But I decided to go through and take the Brisnet Past Performances, because the Kentucky Derby future wager pool number 2 takes place this weekend. Of course, that's the Par Mutual future bet. And Brisnet will list the top, 23 horses, and then a bunch of other horses as the 24th entrant, which is the field. And typically at this time, the field is the favored entrant. But there were 79 total horses. I put all of them into my database and then generated the fair odds based on my win factor criteria. And that's just a computerized fair odds model. Then I looked at the trainers, and if they had multiple horses, basically consider that an entry to get some fair odds, and talked about some of the trainers that I thought represented good value, and also looked at Haskin's odds. Dale Romans, Haskin has it 8-1. At U.S. Racing, he's 18-1, 50-1. Now, I had a guy on Facebook say, well, I'll take that 50-1. And he made note of the fact that a couple of the horses that Romans has in Derby consideration show a higher probability than that based on the morning line for this future wager. And so I wanted to discuss that a little bit, because when we talk about value wagering, it's sometimes a tricky thing. When you are looking at underlays and overlays, especially underlays, because that's what we've got here, according to my fair odds, I've got Romans at 50-1. Now, we're not trying to fine line it. Like when this guy said, I'll take the 50-1. Well, yeah, at that point, it's a fair bet according to my fair odds. But you would never set fair odds that tight, because if you can, you've got this game over a barrel. I really want to drum home that point, and I hope people will see where I'm going here. Just because you think a horse is 30-1 and it's going off at 5-1 does not mean you offer somebody at the track 29-1 because, by golly, you're getting value because the horse is 30-1 on your line. Again, if your line is that accurate, you are making money hand over fist. When we're looking at overlays and underlays, we're looking at generalities, and we're looking for those big gaps. If somebody were looking for odds from me, what odds am I going to give them? Let's say I'm betting on an exchange. I'm not going to give them 50-1. That would be foolish. I would give them 18-1, or if I'm trying to entice them, maybe I give them 19-1, so they get a better price from me than they would from U.S. Racing. But I'm not giving them 50-1. That's not the way it works. We're looking for those massive cushions. I've also said, let's look at it from the opposite perspective. Let's say I have a horse that I think is 2-1, and he's going off at 30-1. Don't think for a second that the horse is going to win 33% of the time, as your fair odds predict. Chances are you've made a mistake here, because it shouldn't be that kind of a gap. Now, every once in a while, maybe that does happen, but your horse is still not going to win at a 33% rate. And I have done multiple testing on this. You can talk to anybody who does fair odds, and you're just not going to find that. You're looking for these kinds of gaps, because you hope that that 2-to-1 who's going off at 30-to-1, maybe he wins one time in 20. You still make money because you've still got an overlay there. But there is a massive difference between winning 1 out of 3 races and 1 out of 20 races. Anyway, I'll be right back with Carolyn Sumner. Looking for some action? Well, if it's sports and casino action you're after, USRacing.com has got you covered. At USRacing.com, you can get the latest betting lines on pro and college football, basketball, and all the MLB and NHL action, too. Heck, you can even get the latest odds in the presidential race, the Academy Awards, or who's going to be the next James Bond. So if you're looking for some sports and casino action, look no further than USRacing.com, the place that's setting the pace.
Now, back to your host, while he's still sober, here's Derek.
I'm now joined by Carolyn Sumner. Carolyn has been a longtime Facebook friend, and she just came out with a great new website called U.S. Horse Racing 101. Really kind of a, you know, beginner's type guide, even for players who've been around the track for a while. Just giving information on how to get started at the racetrack, how to bet, all kinds of different stuff. Welcome to the program, Carolyn.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
So, like I mentioned, we've been Facebook friends for a long time. What prompted you to start this site? Because I thought it was such a cool idea.
Well, thank you. It's been a longstanding kind of idea. In 2013, I was facing shoulder surgery, and it was a huge blow to me. I'd been in the barns pretty much my entire life. And my surgeon was telling me that I had about 5 to 10 years to find a new career because the damage was that extensive. And, I was just really upset about it all. And, I went out to dinner one night. I was by myself and I was just scrolling through the Pollock Report. And I believe there was a scandal about LASIK, and a lot of people in the comment sections of the Pollock Report were just very angry about how the public was judging the sport. And there were several comments about how someone needed to take initiative and stand up and educate the public. And that's really what got the wheels turning for me.
Well, you mentioned you've been around the racetrack your whole life. You're from Alabama, so I take it you're an Auburn fan. But what got you started in racing? Obviously, Alabama, kind of like, you know, my home state of Colorado, doesn't have a rich history of horse racing anyway.
Yeah, well, I grew up with the Hunter Jumpers and the Eventing. I didn't get involved in the racetrack until I actually went to college in 2009, but I did ride several off-track thoroughbreds. I'd always been interested in the sport, but I'd never been around racehorses until 2009.
And Carolyn, you're a younger fan. What do you think, you know, we talk about this all the time in horse racing, how do you bring in younger fans and people come out with different ideas that are basically the same ideas, just repackaged, I think, over and over again. How do people in racing get younger fans involved?
I think the biggest issue that I've noticed is we have a lot of older people who are trying to generate interest. And they're not trying to grow it, what I would say, organically. A lot of these programs, a lot of these people, they're already catering to people who are already at the racetrack. And the people who are at the racetrack already know about horse racing. So I think a big, oh my God, can we start this over again? I got so nervous.
Oh, that's quite all right. What we'll do, in fact, let me get a time marker here. That was actually going well. So there's no reason to be nervous. So, okay, 3:03. So I'm just going to do a countdown again and then just start up your question or your answer at that point. Well, you know what? Just to make it easier for you, I will rephrase the question because sometimes it's hard to remember, you know, even what was said. So let's
okay.
See, what, like 3:16. So 1, 2, 3. Carolyn, you're obviously a younger fan, and one of the big debates in horse racing is how do we get younger people involved? What do you think needs to be done to bring in new fans?
I think that younger people need to be involved with bringing attention about the sport to the younger fans. A lot of what I've seen have been older people in their late 30s, early 40s, and their 50s, even their 60s, and they're trying to make what already appears to be an old person sport, for lack of a better term. And they're not bringing in young people to encourage more young people to come out to the tracks.
Let me ask you this, because I fear this may be a problem, just because I've seen this at the racetrack. And I don't know when it happens. You know, I'm 48 years old. I don't think I'm there yet, but possibly it happens when you're 50, 52. I don't know. But people just become curmudgeonly and they start to be so rude. You know, you're in line trying to learn a bet and I see guys and they're tapping their feet and they're getting upset. And there's almost a condescension sometimes, I think, with veteran fans and newbies. It's almost like they're an irritant. Have you experienced that? Do you think that's an issue?
I have. And I think it's a real issue. Whenever you get impatient with these people who they're just out at the races, they're enjoying their day and they're trying to get a hold of it. And then you have some other guy smoking a cigar, blowing smoke in your face, tapping his feet, trying to make you hurry up. And you're just trying to place a $2 bet. I wouldn't want to be in that environment. And I can see why that would turn other people away.
Carolyn, I've been to your website. It's ushorseracing101.com. Great looking site. What's the end game with it? What do you hope to accomplish?
Thank you. Well, it was never intended to be created for the industry as an end goal. It was always created for the fans. Anyone who wanted to know anything about the sport, how to place a wager, how to own, even the ethics involved in the sport. It's taking the sport on a silver platter and just handing it to the public. That's what I've always envisioned it being.
That's so random.
You want answers?
What'd you say? Right. Funny how.
Hey, come on. We're superheroes. What could happen?
What would you say you do here?
You're not a eunuch, are you?
What do you all know about death?
Do you have any marijuana I might be able to buy from you?
Is it true that you're in the middle of a nervous breakdown?
Who said that?
Why do you say you feel trapped in a man's body?
It's the random question segment. So, your first random question. What is something you know you do differently than most people?
Oh, my gosh. I don't even know.
Maybe it's the way you answer random questions. Maybe that's a little bit unique.
Perhaps. This has definitely caught me off guard.
Okay.
Well, I'm thinking about this a little too much.
Well, that's the idea. All right. Here's the next one. We'll consider that a wash. All right. Let's go on to the next one. This is going to be easy, Carolyn. Have you ever been to China?
I have not. I've always wanted to go, though.
All right. Well, there you go. Have you ever overcome a deep fear?
I think so. Whenever I was very young, I developed an irrational fear of sharks in the swimming pool. And I think when I was like 11 or 12, I realized that it was a deep-seated but very irrational fear. But I do swim in swimming pools now.
Very good. Well, I've been chatting with Carolyn Sumner. Carolyn, great website. Thank you so much for coming on the show, and I hope you come back.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it, Eric.